For us tonight, I'd like to talk about the relationship between wisdom and compassion. And we've kind of talked a little bit about this in the questions and answers and how we have like emotionality has the thoughts, the ideas, and then there's the physical sense. And so there's kind of this almost juxtaposition between these two elements. But wisdom and compassion, we can look at it a little bit broader in this perspective. Now, as practitioners, as meditative students, we're starting to cultivate greater and greater sensitivity to our experience. We're learning how to sense our body sensations, sense our breath in more nuanced ways, noticing that acuity of being able to hear a sound and just rest our attention on that. We're kind of waking our senses up. We're waking our capacity to sense, to observe, to see, to hear, to smell. And in that receptivity, it's like really we're becoming more clear. There's more allowance for what's being seen. And we start to see what's underneath the surface. It's like things which have been perhaps more repressed or unacknowledged start to arise forth. I remember when my wife and I, before we became married, we did a kind of a couples exercise where we took time listening to each other. So one person would speak and just share whatever was on their mind, you know, stuff about their relationship. And the other person would just simply paraphrase that and make sure they had it right. And when we really got the knack of it, the person who was speaking felt deeply affirmed, deeply seen, and more stuff would come up, things which were even surprising to that person. And then we would switch roles. Doing this practice is like learning to listen to ourselves deeply. So the content starts to arise up, starts to open up in a certain way. And as it does so, we often feel, you know, those unfelt feelings, those unfelt beliefs, they start to rise up and can be, you know, sometimes intense, sometimes just interesting to notice. And it's helpful to bring the quality of compassion to meet those, with compassion, with kindness, and to balance them with wisdom, to have wisdom come into that sense of broader perspective. So let's talk around this a little bit more to understand that. Now, many of us tend to have a default that perhaps we tend to be more intellectually based, more thought-based, concept-based. That's our kind of our happy place. That's our default. Or perhaps we tend to be more emotional, tend to more feel things deeply. Sometimes it even is revealed by how we say something. We say, I think this versus I feel this. You know, it's just, there's no right or wrong, better than another. It's just noticing our natural tendencies. Now, wisdom and compassion from a meditative standpoint take on a little different meaning. So when we talk about wisdom, we often think about our intellectual understanding, our skills in memorization, our techniques, our logical thinking. These are all important ways of showing wisdom. But for meditation, we're more focusing on the wisdom that comes from direct seeing, the wisdom that arises naturally as we really connect with something. Now, as we've been talking and as you've been sharing during these questions and answers, you're giving examples of that all the time, that you're seeing your experience in a certain way and you're acknowledging it, you're articulating it. You're growing, the wisdom is growing in you because you're growing that capacity to see, to actually make contact. Now, sometimes a pitfall we get into is we lead with our intellect and we, you know, lead with our ideas of things versus our direct experience of that. Again, ideas, concepts, they have their place. They really help us navigate the world, help us build all the homes that we're living in right now and our work. It definitely has its place, and it has its limitations. There's a story I often tell about this. Is in terms of my grandfather, my Carol Guile, who's my mother, is her mother, her father, I should say. Back in around the turn of the century, he was on hospice. He was dying from prostate cancer. And I remember being able to spend some time with him during these last month or so of his life. And he used this phrase, "This too shall pass." He was a Christian man and found some solace in that. But as he was saying it, I could see, kind of, I got a sense that he was coming from his, really from his intellect, his idea, the idea of it was reassuring. And then one day he wanted to shave. And so we cleared, you know, the hallway so we could take his wheelchair down to the bathroom. And he saw his reflection in the mirror after not seeing it for a month or so. And he was shocked by how much his body had changed, how much has it deteriorated. You know, the reality, he said, "Is that me?" He was shocked by the image of that. And as I witnessed that, and as I accompanied him on this journey for that period of time, I could see how that image, it made a whole different understanding of "this too shall pass." You know, it moved from being this intellectual idea to like, oh, the felt, the actual reality that this body too is passing, this life too is passing. And so wisdom really is tempered by this the personalization of it, really feeling the deep personal nature that yes, this too shall pass. The same way that really seeing the way your emotions form around something, the way you react to something, the way your mind goes this way or that, that personal seeing, that helps transform wisdom from this intellectual concept into the direct understanding, the direct experience. So this is like a little taste or a little pointing toward the potential for direct seeing and the wisdom that grows from that. And so wisdom really needs compassion to temper it. It needs that meeting of this moment's experience, meeting with the quality of tenderness, with the quality of intimacy, really. That brings that quality of knowledge into wisdom, into direct seeing, direct understanding. Now, sometimes with compassion, we become overwhelmed by our emotions. And I think we all have experienced that when things are feels like our life is falling apart, when things, you know, this is falling, we lose this person, we lose this experience, this, just everywhere you look, things are changing. Or perhaps it's just one thing that's so gripping that just feels like it, we have no perspective. We're just trying to keep our head above water with the intensity of our emotion. So learning how to bring wisdom in those times helps to help balance and calm down the intensity of the emotionality, the experience. The quality of compassion is really tempered by the wisdom element. So we often talk about compassion as the quivering of the heart in response to pain. The quivering of the heart in response to pain within ourselves, within someone else. But I like to add that compassion has this element of this willingness to turn toward, to meet what is painful, what is in suffering. And once that meeting is that touch point, to ask what is needed here? What is needed? And that's a question of wisdom, the quality of wisdom that comes in. Now, often as a number of questions came up or kind of our dialogue earlier this evening, is that we noticed how an emotion can really be amplified and perpetuated by our thoughts, our putting our energy into the beliefs around it. This is comes to the one way to talk about this is the second dart teaching. This is a graphic teaching from the Buddha that if someone's walking along and someone gets hit by like a little dart, an arrow, they're going to feel pain. There's a physical pain of that injury. Doesn't matter if they're the Buddha. Doesn't matter if they're whoever you think is the opposite of the Buddha. They all experience the exact same physical sensation. What's different is someone who's practiced, who's cultivated their mindfulness, their attention, cultivated their wisdom and their compassion, stays more or less just with the physical sensation of that first dart. Someone who hasn't practiced, who hasn't trained their mind, we go into that reactivity. We start to rant. We start to make all kinds of stories around it and get really worked up. And the Buddha said, this is like giving yourself a second dart, a self-inflicted dart. Right? So that's really that. That's a, if you ever wonder why you learn to meditate, it's learning to not add that second dart. And you find that spontaneously as you go through your life, and especially as you practice diligently and kind of get some grounding in that, you find that you naturally start dropping away that second dart. And you'd be surprised that, you know, this, I used to be so reactive around this one person or this one situation. And I find myself instead actually listening to them, actually connecting with them. This is releasing that second dart. Stepping your toe instead of spending 15 minutes ranting and yelling at people, you spend 5 minutes feeling the sensations of that hurt toe and getting some ice for it. You find yourself becoming gentler inside with your internal dialogue instead of criticizing and adding that internal critic and that harshness. There's a compassion that starts to arise. So compassion, you know, starts to have that broader perspective. Some ways to help bring that in. Again, we explored this in the questions and answers, is feeling that sense of expanding our attention. You know, when we get charged, we get triggered, you know, literally our attention narrows down. We stop seeing everything else around us except what we're obsessed about, what we're gripped around. We can, as one person, Carlito, was talking about that body sense, our bodies really collapse around things. And that's why when we sometimes follow that, we amp up that enough so that it actually releases from us. So learning to see that collapsing, say instead opening your eyes and intentionally broadening the gaze. I love to do this when I'm feeling really emotionally charged, you know, triggered, is to go for a walk in the woods and just let my gaze be soft, taking in the beauty of nature around me. And letting that beauty and that expansive view start to give an internal spaciousness, an internal expansiveness. Sometimes you can work with different reflections. I learned this one I'll share with you, that I was taking a year-long class from my teacher, Rodney Smith, on using death and dying as a spiritual practice. And he would give us monthly homework to practice with and engage around this topic. And one of the exercises was to go to a graveyard. I go to the graveyard and reflect and look at all the gravestones and reflect on all the tears that have been shed for those people represented by their gravestones. So this is a point in the class where, you know, I started to feel really heavy around my own mortality and the grief of my loved ones, and all that was very too personal. My compassion had lost its balance. It had lost its ballast and was getting so contracted. But by actually opening my eyes and noticing, okay, that person has been grieved for, and this person. And after a little while, I started to realize that my grief is not unique. You know, it's part of this universal grief. And then I expanded it to all the gravestones across the country, across the world. And suddenly that very personal charge feeling of my own mortality, that fear, that pain, suddenly became this shared experience, became shared with all people. And I was amazed to watch as I walked through like a department store, just feeling the availability, the access to complete strangers, just this open-heartedness that came from that shift of perspective. This is that movement from a contracted sorrow to wisdom, really supported by, to compassion, I'm sorry, supported by wisdom. There was a story from the Buddhist time that a woman had lost her only child and was overcome with grief over that child's loss. And she just was beside herself, had really lost contact with reality and was carrying her dead child around, asking for someone to help her in some way. And the Buddha said, I can help you. You know, I can help you with your grief. I help you see. And he said, but the medicine that's needed is a mustard seed, okay, a very common spice in that time in India. But it has to come from a household that has never experienced a loss. So the woman goes from house to house asking for a mustard seed, and people, of course, are happy to give it to her. But each house, they have lost someone, their grandfather, their grandmother, their daughter, their husband, their wife, their brother, their sister. And after so many houses, at some point, this woman realized that, yes, this isn't just my grief. This is the grief. And she was able to finally put her child into burial, into release, and to actually grieve and to move on. So the sorrow she was felt was transformed to compassion as it was brought into this perspective of wisdom. So in this way, wisdom and compassion really are one and the same. The heart of wisdom has a quality of compassion in it. The heart of compassion has to have this perspective of wisdom. So learning to work with that, to learn your own tendencies, you know, to find that place of balance is so essential. I'm just going to conclude with a poem that I often like to teach from. And it speaks to this balance of wisdom and compassion. It's called Kindness by a Palestinian poet named Naomi Shihab Nye. Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. Feel the future dissolve in a moment like salt in a weakened broth. What you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved, all this must go so you know how desolate the landscape can be between the regions of kindness. How you ride and ride, thinking the bus will never stop. The passengers eating maize and chicken will stare out the window forever. Before you learn the tender gravity of kindness, you must travel where the Indian in a white poncho lies dead by the side of the road. You must see how this could be you, how he too was someone who journeyed through the night with plans and the simple breath that kept him alive. Before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak to it till your voice catches the threads of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore. Only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to gaze at bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, "It is I you have been looking for." And it goes with you everywhere like a shadow or a friend. All right, if you could just sit quietly for a moment or two, letting those words settle.